Chapter 5. I took aim at the wolf in front of us again, this time at the head. The wolf topped and waited, as if curious to see if I would really waste another bullet on it.
These aren't normal wolves.
I gathered that. How do we get away from them? The wolves started to move again, and I fired at a smaller one on my right. The pack stopped again, and in a weird, synchronized move, they all turned toward the wolf I'd shot. That one hung its head for a moment, and I thought I saw blood along its snout. But then the wolf shook its head and lifted its muzzle, and there wasn't a drop of blood anywhere. Shit, I muttered. Alarm bells were going off like crazy in my head, which meant I only had one bullet left. Of course, that didn't really matter since the bullets didn't have any effect on the wolves anyway. What I couldn't figure out was how they were protected. Some animals had hides so thick that they were as good as armor, but I wasn't convinced that was the case with these wolves. It was more like the bullets had been absorbed somehow. Sorsha had dug out the fire sticks and handed a pair to me. It was as good as any other option at that point, and I watched as she managed to create enough flame to light the fuses. Before we lit the first fuse, though, a gentle hum began to saturate the air. I could feel the vibration of it as well, like a gentle breeze blowing across my skin. The wolves started to lower their heads, and bit by bit, they stepped back. A woman appeared suddenly out of the corner of my vision. She stepped around the edge of an old house, her arms lifted over her head as if in benediction. She walked toward us, slowly and calmly, and when she was only a few feet away, she lowered her arms to her sides and nodded toward the first wolf I had shot. The humming disappeared, and the woman began to chant something in a language I had never heard before. It wasn't the one the mages used to cast spells. I could recognize the sounds of that one, even if I didn't know what the words meant. But this one was full of strange tones I hadn't heard before, and moved at a slower pace, like a tortoise moving between ponds. The slow pace of the woman's speech gave it a soothing rhythm, not unlike Sorsha's own magical voice. Sorsha and I both stood still and listened to the near chant, as enraptured with the sound as the wolves that had surrounded us were. The wolves, for their part, cocked their heads and twitched their ears as if they understood what was being said. When the woman was done, she raised her arms again, and the wolves slunk away. The woman watched them leave, a sad look on her face as they faded away into the shadows once again. When the last wolf had vanished, and the birds and squirrels started to chatter again, the woman turned toward me and Sorsha and gave us a quizzical look.
"Are you mutants?"
she asked, though the tone of her voice indicated that she didn't believe that. I finally realized that she was a mutant. It was hard to spot at first glance. She looked like any number of women I knew, with dusky skin, long black hair and a braid, and warm brown eyes that were full of concern. But as she walked toward us, I could see that the dusky tone of her skin was really a very fine coating of fur. A line of spots started just below the jawline and formed a trail down her neck, then disappeared beneath her gown. And the loosely bound braid barely concealed the two tufted ears that flicked in our direction.
"No,"
Sorsha finally replied.
"We needed a shortcut."
The woman looked at us like we were the most bizarre things she'd ever seen. And since we'd just admitted that we'd ventured inside a mutant wasteland in search of a shortcut, it was hard to find fault with that evaluation.
"This sounds like a tale I'd like to hear,"
the woman finally said.
"My name is Danielle Greentree, but everyone just calls me Danny. I'm Sorsha, and this is Hex,"
Sorsha offered in return.
"Well, Sorsha and Hex, I could offer you some food and drink and then help you on your way,"
Danny suggested as she continued to stare at us in amused puzzlement.
"Though I should probably warn you that we don't get many guests around here, so some of my social skills may be lacking."
Sorsha and I exchanged questioning looks. There was no doubt that Danny was a mutant, but she didn't seem to be the bloodthirsty beast we'd all been warned to avoid. If you ignored the ears, fur, and the spots, she seemed perfectly normal. Of course, so had a lot of the other people we'd met so far on this journey, and they had turned out to be anything but nice or normal.
"I promise, I don't bite, and I don't eat human flesh,"
Danny added when neither of us leapt at her invitation. A break would be nice, I finally admitted as I slipped the gun into my jacket.
Good,
Danny declared.
I can't wait to hear what's going on outside the walls.
Danny walked away, and after a moment, Sorsha and I followed after her. She led us past more decaying homes and around the edges of an old playground. There was an eerie feel to the place that always seemed to exist in these forgotten towns, like the people who had lived here might return at any moment. There were toys scattered in one yard, and a flat machine with an engine, four wheels, and a bar to push it abandoned in another. Curtains still hung in the windows, and cars were scattered on streets and parked next to homes. Behind the town, we climbed along a hillside and came to a halt near a pre-magic building that looked out over the flatland below. It was a two-story red brick structure surrounded by a parking lot, a field of corn, and an oval track that had no obvious purpose. There was a reviewing stand like the town back home set up for celebrations, but this one sat near the edge of the corn. Nearby stood two rows of poles that arced toward each other. A flat board had been attached to the end of the pole with a metal circle nailed to it. The circles were set into the board horizontally and faced each other across about 90 feet of cracked concrete. "What was this?" I asked, as Danny started to walk toward the building.
"A high school,"
Danny replied. The mutant woman led us across the parking lot to a wide staircase. We climbed the steps to the 6 doors that stood at the top. There were more signs of life here, like the fanciful figures someone had painted on the doors and the pots of herbs on the windowsills. There was also a warning sign next to the doors with a picture of a red-robed mage with an X over it. "Do you live here alone?" I asked as I studied the sign.
"Oh, goodness, no."
Danny laughed as she held the door open.
"There's quite a few of us here. It's safer than living alone in one of the houses and easier to care for, though there are quite a few who still try to live on their own or with one or two others." "And everyone here is a mutant?"
Sorsha asked in disbelief.
"Well, no one else comes through here just to get to the other side,"
Danny pointed out.
"Until now."
Danny guided us down a long, wide hallway lined with flat metal cabinets fronted by stacked rows of doors. We passed doorways with glass panels that looked in on large square rooms. Some still looked like the classrooms I knew, with desks for students and a chalkboard at the front. Others had clearly been converted to personal use. Yet we hadn't seen anyone else. There were definitely other people in the building. I could hear them as they moved around, and the susurration of whispered conversations, but no one appeared to greet us or demand to know why we were there. It seemed odd, though. Maybe it wasn't in a place where visits from guests were non-existent. We ended up in a room large enough to hold several hundred people at one time. There was a stage at one end where a handwritten sign announced the next performance of Jolie. The rest of the space was filled with long beige tables. Only a few had chairs, though, and Danny led us to a group of seats near another entrance, though this one and its companion a few feet further down the hall had no door. Danny waited until Sorsha and I were seated and then disappeared into the adjoining room, which, if the smell was any indication, was probably the kitchen. She returned a few moments later with pitchers of fresh water and apple cider, a basket of fresh rolls, and a platter of cheeses, pickles, and nuts, all carefully balanced on a tray that was a bit small for the job.
"Please help yourself,"
the mutant said, as she set everything on the table. She disappeared into the kitchen again, then returned with clean glasses, plates, and some dried sausage.
"This looks delicious,"
Sorsha declared as she took in the options. I poured everyone a glass of cider, then took my turn selecting my food. Even though we'd eaten on the road, I was hungry again, especially after the encounter with the wolves. I filled a roll with a soft, creamy cheese, added some slices of the sausage and pickles, and then bit into the heavenly concoction.
"Mmm, I don't know if you're the chef," I finally said when I'd scarfed down half the roll. "But this is really wonderful. I don't think I've ever had sausage as good as this, and this cheese is perfect."
"Thank you,"
Danny replied with a grin.
"Though I'll confess that the only part of this that I can take credit for is milking the goat and collecting the walnuts."
"Do you mind if I ask about the mutants who live here?"
Sorsha asked.
"I don't mean to sound rude, but everything we've ever been told is that mutants aren't human anymore and that they'll kill you and, well,
eat you?"
Danny finished for the blonde, who had suddenly turned red with embarrassment.
Don't worry, I'm not offended. I know exactly what the Magisterium claims. I certainly heard plenty of it while I was growing up.
So you've lived outside the walls, I pressed.
Until I was 20.
Danny sighed.
My father left not long after I was born, so it was just me and my mother. She used to help me shave the fur off every morning so no one would know. Oh, and the hats I had to wear to help hide the ears. Between those and the bushy hairstyles my mother created for me, I was the least fashionable girl in town. So what happened?
Sorsha asked.
I fell in love.
Danny said with a shake of her head.
Cutest boy in town. Not unlike the one you've got here.
I felt my cheeks turn red, though I tried to keep a stoic appearance. Both Danny and Sorsha grinned at my reaction. Then Sorsha turned to look at Danny again.
We were quite the item for 2 years,
Danny continued.
And then Barbara Kingston moved to town. Her father was some important muckety-muck for the Magisterium and liked to parade around town in his red robe. Barbara set her sights on Jeremy and did everything she could to lure him away. Jeremy remained faithful, though, so Barbara had to resort to other tactics.
I'll guess she was the one who found out you were a mutant, I surmised.
I was never sure how she figured it out,
Danny mused.
Aside from the fur, the ears, and my agility, there aren't any other signs. I always suspected she used some of her father's magical devices somehow, but doesn't really matter. She found out, and she denounced me. I was arrested before I even knew about her claim. I was tried 2 days later and sent here.
Did that happen to everyone who lives here? I asked.
Most have similar stories,
Danny agreed.
Some of the younger ones were born here.
But...
Sorsha started, then paused.
But how did all those stories about mutants get started?
Oh, there are mutants that will eat humans,
Danny replied.
What the Magisterium won't tell anyone is that there are degrees of mutation. Those of us who live here mostly have some odd physical quirk as well as certain abilities, like being faster or leaping higher than the average human. But other than that, we are still human.
And at the other end of the spectrum, I prompted.
Some mutants are more animal than human,
Danny admitted.
Sometimes it's just part of the mutation, but a few choose that path.
They choose to be like animals?
Sorsha asked in disbelief.
I think they feel that if they're going to be treated like animals, they might as well act like animals.
Danny sighed.
I suppose that's a rather simplistic take on the whole thing, but the best way I can explain it.
Then those wolves we encountered, I prodded.
Actually, not mutants,
Danny remarked.
They're mages.
What?
Sorsha demanded.
Shapeshifters,
Danny replied.
Another dirty little secret of the Magisterium. You see, a shapeshifter can only stay in his animal form for a limited amount of time. If they stay too long, it becomes harder to return to their human form. Some just live out their lives as whatever animal they shift into, while others get caught in between.
That's what happened to those wolves. That's why they're not really solid.
Exactly,
Danny said with a nod of approval.
But I've never heard of such a thing,
Sorsha protested.
Oh, they're much more careful at keeping an eye on shapeshifters these days,
Danny replied.
But there was a time when the Magisterium didn't understand what would happen, and they encouraged the shapeshifters to spend as much time as they could in their animal forms. By the time the Magisterium figured out what was happening to all their shapeshifters, they had millions of these things on their hands. As you saw, they're hard to kill, so the mages figured it would be easier to just round up any that were too close to the cities or farms that were under Magisterium protection and toss them in the wastelands with the mutants and other undesirables.
But you spoke to them, I pointed out.
We've learned that they still have some degree of humanity,
Danny mused.
We had a member of the Navajo tribe with us for several years, and he discovered that they seemed to understand the Navajo language. We don't know why, but we all learned enough to talk to the wolves whenever we encounter them.
So, there are more out there somewhere, just roaming free?
Sorsha asked.
I don't know how many more might still be roaming free,
Danny replied.
I will say that the Magisterium hasn't put any more inside here for quite some time, though we did get a shapeshifter who was caught in between human and badger a couple of years ago. He's a nasty creature, so we avoid him as much as possible.
I had no idea about any of this,
Sorsha mused.
The early years after the meteorite were a time of great changes and a struggle to survive. And a lot of those events are only remembered by the very old.
Danny noted, sadly.
It's extraordinary,
Sorsha murmured.
But now it's your turn,
Danny declared with a smile.
Why are you here? I know you're not mutants or shapeshifters, and I know the Magisterium didn't bring you here. There's always quite a production at the gate when they're sending someone else in.
We are heading west, to get away from the Magisterium. Danny cocked her head to the side for a moment, then gave me a grin.
Would it have something to do with that gun you're carrying?
She asked. Huh, you saw that, I demanded.
It was hard to miss,
she pointed out.
And I've seen and heard a gun before. I'm just curious how you were able to get your hands on one.
It's... I stuttered and then looked to Sorsha.
He's a gun mage,
she explained. Well, so much for keeping it a secret.
Oh.
Danny muttered as she studied me more closely.
Now that must be giving the Magisterium fits. I would say you could stay here, but I can't speak for everyone, and I'm afraid mages aren't welcome here, even if they can produce guns.
There's a safe place we were trying to get to,
Sorsha added.
But we had to duck in here to escape some mages that had followed us.
Danny mused. Our quiet time was coming to an end at that point. The mutants who had avoided us up to that point started to emerge from the other areas of the school. The first few who shuffled into the room ventured in and out of the kitchen, but refused to speak to us or even look at us. That was followed by two women who deliberately stared at us as they walked by, but still wouldn't speak. The impasse was broken by a young man about my age with curly hair, slanted eyes, and tufted ears that swiveled like a cat's. He stomped into the room with a group of young men and women on his heels and stormed over to our table.
These aren't mutants, he spat as he looked us over. They're normals.
They are,
Danny acknowledged.
And they'll be on their way again soon.
Well, what the hell are they doing here?
He demanded.
They got lost,
Danny replied with a shrug.
Ah, bullshit,
the boy declared.
Portal mages make mistakes,
Danny pointed out calmly.
And we're not animals in here, no matter what the Magisterium claims. So I've helped them as best I could, and I'll show them how to leave.
We should kill them and eat their bones,
the boy sneered.
The only meat you've ever eaten is chicken and fish,
Danny pointed out.
The closest you've ever come to tasting human flesh was the time you got in a fight with Roderick and bit his finger. Now go away, Peter, before you do something really stupid.
Peter scowled at Sorsha and me, but another adult had arrived by then. He was a tall, well-muscled fellow with pale skin, winter-gray eyes, and white hair. He looked normal, but he grabbed Peter and two of the other youngsters by the nape of the neck with one hand and carried them back to the hall. The rest of the group followed obediently, and Danny gave us a reassuring smile while the man threatened to beat the kids senseless if they didn't learn some manners. When he returned, he moved so quietly I wasn't sure if his feet actually touched the ground. When I looked, I realized he had two padded paws rather than human feet, and he moved with an ease that I'd only seen in animals.
Danny, the man said when he joined us at the table, I know you mean well, but people are upset about them being here.
I can guess who,
Danny sighed.
I wish she would just come here herself instead of sending Peter and his minions.
They're normals, the man pointed out. I don't wish them any ill, but there's too much risk if they stay. The Magisterium will come looking for them once they figure out they're here, and you know where that leads.
All I offered was some food, drink, and a place to rest for a moment,
Danny replied with a touch of heat.
I haven't invited them to move in, and I don't think they would even if I had. I'll send them to Vance and that will be the end of it.
See that you do, the man growled.
He nodded to the three of us and then left the room as quietly as he had arrived.
I'm sorry about all of this,
Danny apologized.
You've already admitted that the mages are searching for you, and it's better for everyone if they don't come here.
We understand,
Sorsha assured her. Who's Vance? I asked.
He's a portal mage,
Danny replied.
He lives here in the wasteland, though he pops out from time to time to pick up supplies or get news.
There's a mage living here?
Sorsha asked in surprise.
Well, hiding here,
Danny admitted.
But he's the only sure way out.
So how do we find him? I pressed.
I'll take you back to the old road,
Danny replied.
There are a couple of places he likes to hang out, and they're both on the road. The first place you should check is Short Hills.
Short Hills, I repeated.
A pre-magic mall,
Danny explained.
He likes to hang out in the old stores there. It's where he spends most of his time. If he isn't there when you arrive, he'll turn up sooner or later.
I spotted some of Peter's minions lurking near the door and stood up. We had definitely worn out our welcome, and that was while they believed we were normal. I didn't want to be around if they discovered we were mages.
Thanks for everything, Danny,
Sorsha said as she stood up as well.
Let me show you back to the road at least,
Danny said with a smile as she rose to her feet with a distinctly cat-like grace. I saw her frown at the youngsters as we returned to the long hall, where a few more mutants had gathered to gawk at us as we made our way back to the front doors. I slid my hand into the pocket where I had stowed the Colt as some of the surprised and amazed looks gave way to more heated and hate-filled expressions, though I hoped I wouldn't have to use it, for Danny's sake. We made it out of the school in one piece and without starting any fights, though more than a few of the mutants had looked willing to test our mettle. Danny made a point of walking beside us as we made our way across the parking lot, and then taking the lead as we climbed down the hillside. She picked a more westerly direction once we were at the bottom of the hill, one that led us past an old drainage ditch and a collection of buildings that had probably had a wall of glass along their fronts at some point. But the glass was gone, and nature had started to reclaim most of it. I could still pick out the cars, though, hundreds, if not thousands of them, in the parking lots and inside the buildings. A few still looked like they could roll down the highway if you had the fuel. From there, we turned down a street lined with small one-story homes. They all looked exactly alike, as if the builder had thrown them up at the same time and then moved on to his next project. I spotted a few numbers still clinging to a spot above the doors and decided that was the only way to tell them apart.
I'm afraid this is as far as I can take you,
Danny huffed as we stopped at a street corner. There were two poles at each corner, one with an octagonal sign that said Stop, and the other with two smaller signs with street names.
I really can't say thank you enough,
Sorsha reiterated.
I was happy to help,
Danny insisted.
I just wish I could have spent more time talking to you. It's nice to see a new face and hear some news from outside the walls. Not that I would wish this on anybody, but, well, there you go.
And this'll take us to Vance? I asked, as I stared at the crumbling road.
It joins up with the old trail just ahead, but I would stay on this one,
Danny explained.
It's well-traveled, so you probably won't run into any more of the shapeshifters. And yes, you should be at Short Hills before nightfall.
Danny shook our hands and gave us both a hug. She waited at the corner and watched us walk away until a wide turn in the road carried us out of sight.
I can't believe she was a mutant. We were always taught that they were evil.
Have you ever met a mutant before?
Oh, once. A kid near the farm. He seemed normal, but the mages showed up one day and declared him to be a mutant. I found out later his parents filed down his teeth and nails so no one would guess he was a mutant. Of course, that started all sorts of rumors about how he would slip out at night and hunt. I think every sheep or cow that had disappeared over the last 30 years was eventually blamed on him.
And yet, he was probably just like Danny, just trying to fit in.
What about you? You must have met mutants on your journeys.
None like Danny. The first mutant I ever met was at the Magisterium School. They brought him in to show us how dangerous mutants were. It's funny, though. At the time, I remember thinking he wasn't really what they claimed, but then one of the mages gave him a shock and he went wild. I realize now that it was probably one of his mutations. What would have been a mild shock to us was very painful to him.
That's terrible, I murmured as I tried to picture being trotted out in front of a pack of children and shocked until I went crazy from the pain.
The next mutant I met was one that was definitely more animal than human. It was a woman, though she couldn't speak, and she walked on all fours. She roamed a forested area in Bavaria, and she had attacked several locals and travelers. The Magisterium wanted to bring her in alive, to study, I guess, but the locals were too afraid. They sent out a search party and killed her.
How did you encounter her? I asked.
I was with Arthur and Bunda. Arthur was convinced we could save her and help her find her human self. We found her in a cave, and I tried to link minds with her. I found her humanity, briefly, but as soon as she smelled the hunting party, the animal took over.
I guess there aren't many mutants left outside the wastelands. The Magisterium seems to swoop in quickly once they know one exists.
But if Danny is right, why do they arrest all mutants? Why not just find those that are truly dangerous?
But then they would actually have to look at the person, find out if they're more human or animal. It's much easier to just make an assumption and lock them all away.
Like Danny's rival. Why play fair when you can send your competition into the wastelands?
As we'd been having this conversation, I'd been aware that we were being followed again. It wasn't the wolves, because I could hear our pursuers moving through the fallen leaves and weeds, and I could see them as well, though they were fast.
I think Peter and his minions decided to tag along.
Do you think they'll leave us alone, or will they try to do something?
Sorsha asked as she glanced over her shoulder.
Not sure, but they're young enough and stupid enough to decide to attack. I have one bullet left in the Colt, but I think I can call up the Ruger again. I just need a good spot to set up my shots.
There's a house just ahead,
Sorsha said, as she nodded toward a small house tucked beneath a massive oak and set back a good distance from the road.
It looks like it's still in good shape.
Not too many windows or doors, so it'll make it harder for them to get in. There was a crash behind us, and I whirled around to see Peter and two other mutants jump down from the branches of a tree. Peter grinned and showed off a pair of pointed teeth. One of his companions, an older boy with a lion's mane and the jointed legs of a big cat, roared and leapt toward us. I just cleared the gun from my pocket in time. I pulled the trigger just before the boy landed on us, and the blast echoed along the street. I was close enough to hear the thump of the bullet as it caught him in the chest, and to smell the first drops of blood as he dropped to all fours in front of us. He heaved like he was about to throw up, and then a fountain of blood poured from his mouth. Fortunately, Peter and the other mutant stared wide-eyed at the lion, and neither had noticed that the Colt had disappeared from my hand. I felt the emptiness in my palm and ached to hold it one more time. But there was no time to mourn. The Colt was gone, and the rest of the mutants were still there, and I'd just killed one of their own.